My fellow Americans, welcome to 2025 in 25 Minutes, flagship program on the 14th and G Podcast.
This is not a red podcast or a blue podcast. It's an American podcast.
A lot of people are saying this is the greatest podcast of all time.
So ask not what this podcast can do for you, but what you can do for this podcast.
Thank you, Mr. President, and welcome back to 2025 in 25 Minutes. We've been gone a little while, but we are excited to be back. I am joined by my co-host, Republican Bruce Mehlman. I am David Thomas, and we are excited to be with all of you here today. This is our first episode without our longtime now former host and forever friend, Dean Hingson. He has moved on to find better podcast collaborators.
Don't have to go far.
We wish him a little bit of well. No, we wish him a lot of well. And we will certainly have him back here as a guest sometime soon. In addition to Hingson being gone here, we seem to have some new announcers walking us in here. Bruce, how did you manage to get four American presidents to introduce our little podcast here?
We're big time, DT, and presidents both dead and alive showed a lot of interest. Actually, they did not. That was the magic of artificial intelligence and the talents of intern Ezra Tal, who helped us put that together. The lawyers insist that I note it was a parody. No presidents, actual or imagined, were harmed in the making of that introduction. DT.
Well, but let me just make a request for the next time we do this. I would like William Howard Taft to announce us in here. Let's see if Ezra can pull a little rabbit out of his hat for that one.
That's good plan, DT. Hey, so what should we talk about today that actually makes sense?
Well, look, now that we're back here, what I've been thinking about a lot this week is today is, we're right in the middle of July here. We are almost at the six-month mark of the second Trump administration here, the 47th president. 6 months seems like 6 months in dog years, though, that we've been doing this here. But probably an appropriate time to take stock, Bruce. So I'm interested in hearing from you, sort of take a little step back. Where have we been here? But probably more important and more interesting is where are we going? Is Trump winning? Is he losing? What do you think? How do you take stock the first 6 months?
You know, it's hard not to take 6 months and conclude Trump's winning a lot more than he's losing. I think if you were to make a list that he was going to get reconciliation and the one big beautiful bill done hours before fireworks explode over the White House, that he was almost going to run the table in getting all of his cabinet nominees, with the exception of Matt Gaetz, that the border would have fewer crossings since the birth of CBP. They are at historic lows, a very secure southern border. You know, the tariffs would be on track to raise $200 to $300 billion, and to date, not crater the economy, though the most recent data make you wonder whether we're starting to see it in consumer prices and inflation. You know, a very aggressive effort to remake government, to go after what they call the deep state, whether you think it's right or wrong, whether they're moving policy forward or against the wishes of laws passed by Congress, they're moving fast and breaking the things that they want to break. NATO is not only mostly up to 2% spending, but they promise they're going to get up to 5%. Iran's efforts to get a nuclear bomb have been set back a couple of years. There are a lot of wins on the board for Team Trump that have them feeling like things are going well. I would note it's obviously not all puppies and rainbows. The peace with Russia and Ukraine promised on day one is nowhere near happening. The president's popularity is, as it's always, mired in the mid-40s. China proved a lot readier for the trade war than we thought they might. The MAGA base, you know, born, raised, and fed for years on conspiracies, is not willing to let the Epstein conspiracy go, even when the attorney general says nothing to see here, move on. But maybe, DT, the thing a lot of the Republicans are perhaps most confident or hopeful about is that the Democrats seem to be in disarray. Their net popularity is lower than that of Trump and lower than that of the GOP. And it seems like they haven't decided if they are going to be a party of Mamdani and AOC, or a middle kind of middle of the road moderate party. What is your take, both on my scorecard for the first 6 months for the administration, but also where your party's going?
You know, a couple of thoughts there. Why don't we talk about Trump first here. You know, I think that the thing that is most notable for me, particularly comparing it to the first Trump administration, if we look back in 2017 here, they certainly came in with a big head of steam. And, you know, this is, as we talk when we go out on the road in person, Donald Trump was the least experienced person ever serve as president his first time. He is arguably the most experienced person the second time around. Prepared, a team that was ready to go, and very loyal behind him. I think that the thing that is most notable for me is not just that they were ready to go and they didn't stumble out of the gates the first time, but there is no Republican opposition like there was last time. It felt like last time around there were people who were trying to get him to move in in certain directions here, provide guardrails for him, both in his administration, in his cabinet, and up on the Hill. And they're all gone. You don't see anybody really trying to push him in another direction here. He's like a wrecking ball, and he's knocked everything out of the way, and he just seems to keep going here. I don't know if that continues as we go along here. I mean, he's had I agree with you. He's had a pretty good run in getting what he wants done here. But to me, it always feels like we're just on the head of a needle here, and things are about to, you're about to fall off. Maybe that's wishful thinking on my part. I've been thinking he was going to fall apart since he came down the golden escalator 10 years ago, but he still keeps going. Now, as far as the Dems are concerned here, I think, the first 6 months have been a lot of reckoning with what happened back on Election Day. And thinking that the Dems were going to win here, I think maybe putting their head in the sand a little bit, right up to the election and ignoring what now appear to be some pretty obvious signs that there were trouble for Democrats here. I don't know if it's a political spectrum thing here as much, though, as I know people like to say, this is going to be an AOC thing versus a moderates thing. I tend to think it's a little bit more of a sort of an old way of thinking, an old way of doing politics versus a new. And I hope the Democrats are going to move in the direction of new, because I think that's what people want. The difference between Mondami and Trump is not as different as you think. They go to populists. They use new media to get their message across. There's some excitement there to build crowds around them. There's not a lot of difference there. I think when you see the sort of MAGA world that has been behind Trump so solidly and what Mondami did up in New York.
Well, there's difference. There are similarities in style and leveraging new media. They also both wear pants, they wear shoes, and they drive in cars. They're going in radically different directions. The populist left and the populist right share tools and share techniques. So did Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. Obviously, there is a world of difference in the policies they're putting forward, whether it deals with community policing, whether it deals with Israel, whether it deals with taxes and public ownership of means of production in the economy. You're right, they're both digitally native and both recognized kind of the individual brand power of American politics, and both are extraordinary anti-establishment. However, I think the only people who might suggest there are greater differences than I just did are Mondami and Donald Trump.
Well, on policy positions, but maybe I'm talking more about winning campaigns.
Yep, that's fair.
And I think that, what I'm hoping is going to happen in the next 6 months here, and I've seen signs of it, is that the Democrats are getting some wind behind their sails. The House floor fell apart again today. Speaker Johnson manages to get these things, these votes done here. But I think there's been a vote that's been going on for 5 or 6 hours here since, that's going on right now here to try to get the rule done on the crypto vote for today. That happens again and again here. It's not just because they're tight margins here, which obviously matters here, but the Dems are unified in the House. They are not given, any... They're making sure that margin of error is as tight as it can be. It's sort of the same thing in the Senate here. So on the one hand, the Democrats, I think, have been trying to figure out what they're going to do next. Who are their big leaders going to be? That's fine. That'll happen as we get towards the presidential here. But when I talk to members up on the Hill now, I think they're getting their groove back a little bit here. They're starting to see the excitement that will come with the midterm elections, where Democrats, if history serves, will win back the House because presidents lose in those midterm elections. They're starting to think that way, and you can see a spring in their step.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The reconciliation drama, when the Democrats were doing it, was in the Senate, where you had Senator Sinema, you had Senator Manchin, you know, holding the whole thing up and people not knowing what was going to happen. Here, you're right, it's the Republicans in the House, which is ironic. The House and the Senate effectively have the same margins, or at least when the full complement of Democrats who were elected are there. But notwithstanding the media, notwithstanding the House Freedom Caucus needing to have kind of their regular fits, again and again so far, when it's time to get stuff done, the president gets on the phone and he gets the stuff done and he gets the stuff through. It's hard to imagine that crypto is where the president's ability to cajole ends, given the huge streak and track record he's had before that.
No, I think he certainly seems to like putting the twisting arms and putting the muscle in on these things.
One here. Of the great whips of all time.
I know. He's a whip. He's his own chief of staff. He basically does every job down there. Just ask him. Again, I do think that we're starting to see that the Dems have this. What I'm most excited about here is you do have these younger leaders, House representatives, Jeffries, Clark, Aguilar, others. And I think this is their time. What I think is most interesting about what has been going on with Trump is, have you noticed he doesn't pick on those new young leaders? He doesn't have a nickname for Hakeem Jeffries yet. When he gets up there and is critical of Democrats and when he wants to pick a fight, who does he talk about? Hillary Clinton, who's been gone a long time now, Barack Obama, Joe Biden. He wants to pick a fight with the old Democrats who he fought with in the past. Not the new guys. Now, maybe that'll change at some point, but like Jeffries spoke on the floor for almost 9 hours against his big, beautiful bill. And what did Donald Trump say about it? Nothing. What did he say about Cory Booker taking over the Senate for 24 hours? Democrats don't have any power right now, but they can speak. And Donald Trump likes to speak. And he's not picking on those younger guys. I wonder why that is.
Well, it's because nobody was paying attention. You know, some of it undoubtedly is muscle memory. You play the old standards when you're an old band and you get back up there. But at the same time, he shoots at people who have been seen as national leaders. Mr. Jeffries is really impressive. I think I share your sense that he probably has a very strong future. But right now, his 9 hours left not a dent, not a mark. Got almost no media. There's no reason for Trump to pick a fight.
I don't agree with that. But
you're very inside the Beltway then if you think that had any national impact.
And look, again, there are things like that where Dems are making a difference, and it's not just Jeffries and Booker. You see it with a lot of these younger members of the Senate. Chris Murphy comes to mind, and a few Senator Schatz, and there are others. The House has a ton of younger members here. The Dems are starting to replace some of those old committee chairs here. This stuff is filtering down here. That young energy is making a difference. And that's just on the Hill here. We've also seen it downtown. We had the No Kings rally. I know you were out, on the roads in Bethesda there. I think I saw you on Wisconsin Avenue.
I was getting a sandwich.
Oh, I thought you had a sign.
I was not
there.
Rallying.
No, you were not rallying. I think that Democrats are ready. They want to fight. And I think that does not bode well for, some of these fights at the end of the year that they're going to happen here. This is going to be knocked down, drag out, really powerful stuff. And I feel like the Dems are ready for it.
You're an optimist, DT, and looking at the little acorn, seeing the mighty oak is a nice way to feel about it. As I look at it, the No Kings rallies were impressive numbers all around the country. I think there is a lot of energy there. But that kind of fits something you and I have observed, and when we talk to boards and audiences, that we've always observed, which is that the activist energy is always against the party in the White House. So yep. When George W. Bush was president, the activism was the birth of the Bernie left. First anti-Iraq, then anti-Wall Street. That helps elect Barack Obama. But the activism then becomes people on the right. At the start of the Obama administration, the Tea Party. By the end, the birth of the MAGA movement. That helps elect Donald Trump. Donald Trump is president. Where's the activism? It's every group left of center that has ever existed on planet Earth because he's a very provocative figure. That and concerns about his management during the pandemic led to in the Electoral College, a squeaker of a win for Joe Biden. Where's the energy been over the last 4 years? It's the red states where the state government, the Republican leaders are saying, hey, Wall Street, all you guys on ESG, if you're not going to do business with a fossil fuel industry, then you can't do business with a state. And you've seen Wall Street back off. It's the Robbie Starbucks and the others going to corporate boards saying, we're going to boycott you guys if your DEI policies are simply straight up reverse discrimination by design. And that helped elect Donald Trump back. It makes all the sense in the world that policies, particularly policies, while everybody seems to be happy that the southern border is more secure, deportations, a hugely controversial policy in what they're doing and how they're doing it. There's a huge debate about whether tariffs are ultimately going to be good for the U.S. economy, reshore manufacturing, generate revenue, or whether they're going to raise consumer prices and make American businesses weaker. I tend to think we're seeing the activist energy through the No Kings rally very early, but I don't see that translating to Democratic leaders. And I certainly don't, in some ways, actually, DT, I think this is good for the Dems in the midterms, because when you think about when presidents didn't lose seats in midterms, it was only since World War II, 20 times, only in 2002 after 9/11. And in 1998, when a Democrat, Bill Clinton, was president, but that was a referendum on the very prominent Republican House Speaker Newt Gingrich. 2026 is not going to be a referendum on Hakeem Jeffries. But we got a long road to go before we get there, DT. What do you think the second half of the year brings in terms of substance, in terms of policy?
Well, it's funny. The second half of the year, DC, I feel like always goes really fast. I feel like the first is sort of busy going out of the gate, new Congress. You got to meet all these new folks here. The end of the year, though, just is a sprint. So what have we got? What has to get done? First of all, government funding, and that's something we've been talking about a lot with our clients this week here. There's a rescissions package, which would take money that has already been approved, sign into law, and claw it back. A controversial thing to do because these agreements last year that were crafted, was an agreement between Republicans and Democrats to keep government funded. Now Donald Trump wants to take that back. Will it pass? Probably so. And when it does, what does that do to having to make an agreement for next year's government funding? There is very little trust now between Republicans and Democrats here. We have ongoing disagreements here. Mike Robinson, our guru appropriator, he knows these things. I should listen to him. But it feels like to me we're going to have a shutdown coming. I don't know if it's going to be on September 30th or later before the end of the year. But as I said, Democrats are itching for a fight, and there's a fight we're going to have. Generally, Democrats believe we should keep government open, believe that federal workers should be on the job here. But how do you stand up to this guy when he doesn't agree to the agreements they made last year and he's firing federal workers left and right regardless? So that's a big one that they've got to get done, number one. Number two, the defense bill. It gets done every year, always has. I suspect this year it will get done as well, even in this pretty highly charged environment. Those are the two must-dos. And then you get to other things like these crypto bills that have been on the floor this week. They're having some trouble on the House floor right now, but can they get those done? A lot of talk on AI, tariffs, other issues, Russia sanctions. These are not in the must-do category, but could happen here. But I'm interested, Bruce, what do you think, particularly when it comes to AI, which I feel like is one issue that continues to just drive so much attention. We're expecting the White House to come out, with an action plan sometime soon here. There's always talks, House and Senate, on trying to move some bills here. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, the action plan should happen next week on the 23rd. They've already scheduled the events at which a lot of these things are going to get announced. Look, we're in a global competition for dominance on AI, and if unfriendly regimes ultimately are able to dominate the hardware, the software, the models, and the systems, that creates a potentially existential risk, a national security threat for the United States, an economic security threat for the United States. We're in a legitimate race. I would expect the administration will be far more tailwinds than some of the crosswinds with a lot of the consumer protection we saw from Team Biden. There will be efforts to drill baby drill and permit baby permit and make sure that we have data centers being built and adequately capable of supplying the data center needs. There will be the energy. There will be a focus on making sure that it's American chips powering data centers in the Middle East and around the world where so much of the investment is happening. I think there'll be a focus on making sure that that American chips and chip equipment continue to lead the world. You know, one of the interesting things, you try to get export controls right. At the same time, when we put export controls on some of our chip equipment makers, but the Japanese and the Koreans and the Dutch, our allies, ostensibly, don't put controls on their own equipment, we're seeing U.S. market share getting displaced by our so-called allies. I think the administration is going to want to focus on things like that. I think they're going to move. We're seeing Doge kind of 2.0, the post-Musk Doge, very much controlled at this point by OMB Director Russ Vought. They're going to continue to try to shrink government and to reorient government, sometimes in very profound ways, and at other times it feels like they're just changing the org chart boxes and then just saying to government contractors, shave off 10% to so we can save some money. Trade policies may be the one that more clients continue to ask about and wonder and worry about. You know, there was the so-called Liberation Day. The markets freaked out. They backed off. But the 90-day window is ending, and we're seeing a lot of those rates seemingly about to come back. Whether this is yet one more example where at the last minute the president will swerve, or whether with the markets kind of calm, the markets didn't start freaking out until there was the sense that maybe he's going to fire the Fed chairman. The markets seem like they're you know, what me worry. And if that's true, that's great. The biggest trade policy question that I haven't solved for is China. And what astounds me is it is and was and has been manifestly clear for years that Chinese industrial policy, subsidizing rare earth mineral production, refinement, led to their having a monopoly and our being dependent, and we kind of charged in on tariffs without seemingly yet putting in a plan in place to be able to be resilient, to not be as dependent. That seems like starting a fight without thinking about the obvious chair that's going to get broken on your head next. But speaking of chairs breaking on heads, DT, we do have the midterms. It's never too early to think about those.
I think about them every day.
You can't wait for them. Well, the Dems seem to have a lot of confidence. You think history will repeat?
God help us if it doesn't. No, I do. I think it'll repeat this year. I feel good. As I referenced earlier here, I think that the House, to me, feels really in reach here. I mean, the Dems only need to pick up a handful of seats here to flip the House. What about three here once we get done with these special elections that are going to happen later this year? That's pretty good odds here because you got a few members who are sitting in districts that Joe Biden won. Those are the top targets here, but the map is expanding. Now, it's interesting you see Texas says they're going to redistrict to try to get more Democrats out of Texas. That's something that could come back and bite them because you start, if you're going to try to make districts more red, you've got to take Republicans away from other districts here. And I understand that that Texas has been a pretty red state here, but there have been opportunities. So on the House, feel pretty good about it. Senate, look, I think the stock is rising over here. The announcement that Senator Tillis is stepping down or going to retire, that's an opportunity for Democrats right there. That's, Democrats need to pick up four seats to take it back. That's a big cycle here. But you see that one, number one. I'd point out that, Susan Collins may or may not run again. She said she's thinking about it and probably has a lot of concerns about it. We'll see how that goes. And then we'll go back to Texas again. Now, it's a little bit like Charlie Brown and Lucy in the football for Democrats down in Texas. But again, we're seeing a lot of momentum here. If John Cornyn was just running himself, that's a tough seat for Democrats to pick up. But if Ken Paxton wins that seat or knocks off Cornyn in a primary, that thing is in play. And so that gets you to three. And if we have three seats in play here, I guarantee you there's going to be a fourth. That's where you get a wave going. So that's my story. I'm sticking to it.
Well, I'm ready to bet you any amount on the Senate. That absent stagflation, you're right. You identified the hopeful places to pick things up, but Susan Collins is hard as hell to beat.
We don't know if she's running again.
I'm betting she is. Texas is very red. It's Lucy and Charlie Brown in the football. I think, and you are papering over or ignoring places the Democrats are at risk, like Georgia or Michigan. So
nobody's raised more money than John Ossoff right now, and he's done it like tenfold over any other senator who's running for re-election. That guy's going to win again.
On the House, the Dems have a better historical case. At the same time, what we know is that there are 13 Democrats in Trump districts and 3 Republicans in Harris districts. DT, I look at the clock. The first rule of 2025 in 25 minutes is to end in 25 minutes.
I got more to say.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have, my friend, but let's do this again soon.
You bet. I would love to. Looking forward to it. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you soon.